Before we dive into today's episode, we have an important opportunity to share with you. Every clinic has one, that person who goes above and beyond, whose dedication truly shapes the future of veterinarian medicine. Nominations are officially open for the 2026 DVM360 Veterinarian Heroes Recognition Program. Since 2021, this program has celebrated the compassion and leadership of professionals across every corner of our field, from surgeons and emergency clinicians to the technicians, practice managers, and client service representatives who keep everything running. If you know a colleague who deserves to be recognized for their extraordinary impact, we want to hear their story. You can use the link in the show notes to submit your nomination. The deadline is Thursday, April 30th, and winners will be honored this August at Fetch Kansas City. Help us elevate the best in our profession. Nominate your veterinarian hero today.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. Well, we have a special guest because when I say special, everyone's amazing, but we're going to be going into this blind together, listeners, and we have a wonderful colleague on the show, and I've seen him a couple of times at our conferences and at the conferences, and I always invite you all, by the way, if you see me, come say hi. If you want to be a guest on the show like this, let's do it, and I want to welcome you all and say hi to Dr. Connor Barish in the house. How's it going, Connor?
It's going well. I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, and I want to know more about you, and I'm really curious to see what your why is and all the great work you do. And this is what I know so far to the listeners, okay? So Dr. Barish is a small animal veterinarian in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, passion for both high-quality medicine and strong client relationships. And I'm curious, what made you become or decide to become a veterinarian?
Yes, so it's kind of what I've always wanted to be. Apparently, since I was 4 or 5, my parents said that's just what I said. I wanted to be a veterinarian. Now, I didn't say veterinarian. Didn't know how to say that word then. But my mom has a sheet from, it's either kindergarten or pre-K. Can't remember. But it had a question, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I put down a guinea pig doctor. So I think I knew what that was then. But I did have a guinea pig named Timmy. And apparently, I wanted Timmy to live a very long, healthy life. And I was going to be the one to do that. So that's the first instance I remember, and kind of just flourished from there.
Yeah, I love that. And I don't know if you know this, the average age that someone decides to become a veterinarian, average, is 10 years of age. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's one of the earliest professional callings that are around, from, you know, human side and, you know, legal, all of that. But veterinary medicine has a very young calling. And just like you mentioned, like I mentioned too on one of my podcasts, is I was probably that age too, 5 or 6, when I knew I wanted to be a veterinarian. So I find that so fascinating, because you get inspired along the way, continue to get inspirations, I'm sure. And were you, did you do any volunteer work at the time when you were a kid, or get involved in any working with vets?
I really didn't. It wasn't until late junior high, early high school, that I actually had my first type of volunteer experience at a shelter. Dog walking, dog bathing, feeding, things like that. And then as I progressed in high school, I started to shadow at our local vet back in Gilbert, Arizona. And that's what gave me the first real experience into what a vet does past the exam room.
Right. And, you know, you don't know it really then, but then now that you know it now, how hard it was, the journey of becoming a veterinarian. Tell us a little bit about that, where you went to undergrad, and was it difficult for you? Was school hard for you? Was it hard to get into veterinary school? What did that all look like?
Yeah, so I went to undergrad at Pensacola Christian in Florida. It's a very small kind of private university. And until I graduated, we didn't have anybody that had gotten into vet school. For my the dean of sciences, that was one of my advisors. That's what he told me, so I believed him. So he really worked with me from the first moment he heard that I wanted to be a veterinarian and get into veterinary school. We had several meetings just trying to perfect my class schedule, my grades, my application, my volunteer hours, my shadowing hours. He pulled me aside and he said, I really want a vet from the school, and we're going to do it. So honestly, if it weren't for Dr. Smith, I really think I would have struggled a lot more, but I had excellent support from him and from the whole science faculty to really push us to start breaking into this field. And since I've gone, there's three or four that I've kind of helped talk with along the way that have since graduated and gotten into schools all over the states.
That's fantastic. And I understand you've helped shape some of the coursework for future students interested in veterinary medicine, right?
Yes. So when it was like my second semester, Dr. Bowman, he was our zoology professor in undergrad. He reached out to me and said, hey, I really want to tailor this towards more of a pre-vet program. We don't have a set pre-vet degree at PCC, but he wanted to make a kind of branch off the biology department where students interested in veterinary medicine could go towards that way and select selectives or electives that would help them. So I helped him develop his lab into more of a necropsy type lab, just to get more of an experience of what we do in vet school when it comes to dissections and necropsies, things like that.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So tell me about vet school. Where did you go to vet school?
I went to St. George University in Grenada. Nice.
Give him a shout out. Shout out to St. George's.
Well, the Harvard of the Caribbean. So I loved it. Now, when I was applying to vet school, admittedly, I didn't know it existed. I didn't know Caribbean schools were a thing. And Dr. Smith had told me, he's like, you should really apply to Ross. Like, you can apply to whatever state schools, but it's going to be a lot harder to get into those. I was also from Phoenix, and we didn't have a state vet school. So Midwestern was around, but it was private. So there was no preference for being in state. It was also like $64,000 a year at that time. So it was an option, but it wasn't the best option. So he said, you should apply to Ross, which was the only Caribbean school I think he knew of at the time. And when I did my Google search, the first one that came up was SGU. And I thought that's the one he told me to go to. So I applied to SGU and got accepted, got a dual degree scholarship for a master's in public health as well. So I jumped at it, took the plunge, made the flight, and it was amazing. It was definitely a lot more than just medicine and education, because you're living in a developing country when you're used to the comforts of the states. And so there were a lot of outside challenges that came in, but I truly think it helped those students, not to sound biased or too pompous about it, but I think we come out a bit more well-rounded because we're not used to gold standard equipment. We learn the gold standard way, but we have to work with what we've got. And I think it makes us a bit stronger when it comes to clinical practice.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's a great perspective to appreciate. And tell me a little bit more about Masters of Public Health. Were you always interested in going down that road, or what did that look like for you?
I wasn't. So again, admittedly, I didn't really know what a Masters in Public Health was. It wasn't on my radar. It wasn't my goal to get as many degrees as possible. I wanted my DVM and I wanted to practice medicine. So when they sent me the offer to do a public health master's along with the DVM, it was a little stressful. It sounded like a lot more work. And I didn't quite know what it was. So I went to one of my other professors and I was like, hey, can you just give me some guidance here? Like, should I accept this? Do you think I can handle this? And he's like, let me just stop you right there. Okay, this school is not only has accepted you into the program you want, but they're offering you like a $35,000 scholarship, free degree essentially, and you're debating it. He's like, if you don't take this, you're kind of stupid. So you should take it. And I'm really glad I did. It was a really good asset to the DVM degree. A lot of the stuff crosses over anyway, as you know. So I was really happy that I did it. It did add one semester on island, but it helped to really solidify that core of us that were in the DVM MPH program. We became really close, and it was a really good asset to have that tight family for the next few years on the island.
That's wonderful. And you hear more about the One Health approach now more so than ever. I'm sure when you were in school, maybe it may have been mentioned, but I think now that you have kind of that dual degree, that's really strong for what we're trying to achieve collectively, you know?
Yeah. And in our cohort, there were 12 or 13 DVM MPH program students, and then the rest were MD MPH. So it really did help to bridge that gap between human medicine and veterinary medicine, because we were all learning in the same classroom. And while our core courses were the same in public health, our you know, specialized programs were different, but it really did show us a lot of crossover and opened the door for a lot of collaboration. There's a book called Zubiquity. I think that's how you say it. I don't know if you're familiar with that book.
It's
about the One Health initiative, and it's a human cardiologist that wrote it. And she talks about her experience kind of bridging that gap and how the work that she did through primates and cardiology in zoos, just the similarities that she saw between that and human cardiology as well, because we are quite similar in a lot of ways. And just kind of starting that conversation of, you know, yes, we're in different professions, but there's a lot that we can learn from each other. And there's a lot that we can contribute to this One Health initiative if we work together, rather than having this huge separation of, you know, I'm a human doctor, I'm an animal doctor, and that's it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Okay, so cut to practicing, doing your thing on your journey of being an awesome veterinarian. And now you're at a different a new chapter, I would say, in mm-hmm. the world of relief veterinarian. So tell me more about that.
Yeah, so when I graduated, didn't really think at all about relief. I didn't know it was a thing. I was in private practice at first for probably the first 3.5 years of graduating. And then we found out we were pregnant with our second kid. And that was a surprise. It was kind of a shock. We weren't quite ready yet. So we needed a pivot. And just around the same time, it was actually 2 years ago at VMX, the first time I went, I was speaking with indie vets. One of my classmates, her former boss, now worked for them. And so she just kind of got me interested and piqued my interest about the company and the whole concept of relief. And the more I talked with them, the better it sounded for our needs and our current lifestyle and situation. I loved my practice where I was at. It was a really hard decision to leave them. My boss was the best mentor I've ever had. And this last year and a couple months of doing relief has been phenomenal. One, just for the flexibility, allowing me to have time off with the kids if my wife needs a break or she has to work, keeps us from having to use daycare, things like that. And it has allowed me to make a lot of great connections with other veterinary professionals in the Metroplex. I did go into this with some goals of, you know, gaining confidence in being a solo doctor running a practice, because a lot of times with relief, you don't have other doctors with you. I wanted to see a lot of different ways of practice, you know, take what I like, leave what I don't like, eventually incorporate that into my own practice. And relief has really allowed me to do that. It's given me a lot of confidence and great connections.
I always said that relief, I used to do relief work too, and I always equated it as being like the culture builder. They kind of look forward to having you come to the practice because it's someone different, different perspective, different way of practicing, how you say things. And I don't know, it was always like a fun thing because it's mutual at the same token, because I go into these practices, I'm like, oh, I really like how she worked up that Cushing's case, or I really like how he did close that surgical incision. You know, so you learn these different things as you go into these practices. And now to your point, it gives you that confidence to be that solo doctor. And I believe, am I mistaken too, that you're on your way to opening a new clinic?
You are not mistaken. So I'm going back to my previous corporate, which is Mission Pet now that they've merged with SVP. I'm going to be opening a LiveWell clinic with them later this year. Our soft opening date is September 1st.
Awesome. So, congratulations.
Thank you. And that was kind of the goal here. Pretty much the same day I was going to text my medical director to set up a call to talk about exiting for a time. She texted me first and was like, hey, would you be interested in taking a clinic with us? And I was like, well, this is really bad timing because we're actually quitting. So had that discussion, but I said, please keep me on that list because yes, that is the ultimate goal. But right now with a new baby on the way, I cannot commit that many hours to opening a clinic. So I just made sure I left on the best terms. And then about a year later, they circled back, asked if I would take a clinic here in Forney, which is just east of Dallas. And we jumped at it. We were ready. We're very excited to do it.
That's awesome. Congratulations. And, you know, it's probably, I guess it's always the unknown a little bit too. You get a little nerve-wracking experience of it, you know, right?
There's definitely some trepidation, but I like to think of it as a healthy fear because
Huge, healthy. Yeah.
there, as much as I don't want to say it, there is a chance of failure, right?
Right.
I have a great support team. I'm not going in this by myself by any means. There's doctors behind me that have had so much experience opening clinics, running clinics. So I know I've got a great team, but there's still that sense of a lot of this falls on you. And if you don't put the work in, it might not go well. So we're not thinking that because it's going to go great, but.
It is. I mean, if you think about us veterinary professionals, we do very well with, opening up businesses and knowing the model. And that's what makes this profession really great is starting these new chapters and evolving into, these new components within the profession. I've always said that you don't want to live a life of shoulda, woulda, couldas. You want to, life is too short and it's meant to be lived. And, this is, sounds like it's one of your dreams to follow that path. And it's going to be fantastic. So it's the end of this year, you're saying September-ish?
Yeah, September 1st is when we're supposed to be
Oh,
open.
okay.
It's under construction right now, so everything is going to be brand new. I'm
Nice.
stoked to just have new equipment, new team, new clinic, zero clients. We get to build from the ground up, and it's so exciting. I'm very happy about this opportunity.
Yeah, that is exciting. Oh gosh, I love all the new gadgets and everything. It's the best, right? I know. And you get to be more in control of your destiny. It's going to be fantastic. Okay, tell me about this. You have a Great Dane.
I do.
And you have a golden doodle. So tell me about these two baby angels.
So we'll start with the golden doodle. She was first. Her name
Okay.
is Phoebe. We got her from Queen Creek, Arizona. So she's a Phoenix Valley native. She was way too expensive for her. But what's sad is that the breeder almost suckered me into getting two for a discount because it's really hard to say no when they're there. Luckily, my bank account just said, no, you can't do that. Otherwise we would have. But she's been amazing. And up until we moved to Texas, very healthy. And then like maybe 6 months after moving here, she started to just not open her mouth all the way. And I was like, well, that's weird. She would kind of yelp in pain when yawning. So my first thought was she's got valley fever. Because back in Phoenix, everything gets valley fever. And we had just come from there. So I ran a fungal panel on her, and she actually came back positive for blasto,
Wow.
which is not common in Phoenix or Dallas. So I worked with an internist to figure out how to get that cleared up. And then after that, I noticed that her master muscles were just disappearing. And now she has triple M. So our suspicion is that that fungal infection set off some type of weird immune response. And so now she's on the lowest dose of steroid, which clinically doesn't really make sense to me because it's not a dose that's even anti-inflammatory for her. But if I taper it at all, she can't open her mouth. So
Wow.
she's still happy and as feisty as ever and plays with the Dane and she's great with the kids, but she looks a little weird if we shave her incorrectly.
Yeah. Aw.
So she's good. And then the Dane, was my dream dog. I always wanted a Great Dane. But growing up, my mom was like, not in my house. They're way too big.
Yeah.
And my gift to myself when I graduated was a Great Dane. And so mom couldn't tell me no anymore. I was out of the house. The only one that really had a say was my wife, but I told her before we got married, like, this is happening. There is no discussion. It's happening. If you'll still have me, you're going to get a Dane as well. So we moved out here. His brother was actually my patient, and he was the textbook blue merle, massive, regal, amazing. And the
Yes.
client told me, she's like, hey, well, the breeder has one more that she's really trying to get rid of. She's trying to push him out. They're moving their operation, so she's got to get rid of him. So I contacted her, and she's like, yeah, I've got one left. He's the runt. His sister's really beat up on him, so he looks rough, but you can have him. I was selling him for 1900, but you can have him for 300. I was like, well, sure, $300 for a Great Dane. I'll do that. And he's purebred, so we'll go for it. There's a lot of things wrong with him mentally, I think. Like he's healthy and
No.
happy, but he capped out at about 105. He's the dumbest dog. I've ever met. He has a lot of hyperness that Danes don't typically have.
Yeah.
So he's got his quirks, but we love him. Unfortunately, I think this has ruined me ever getting another Great Dane. Because while I would want them, my wife is kind of like, if they're all like Winston, we're not gonna
yeah. do it. And does everybody get along with the kids and the dogs? Because it's quite a household you have there now.
Yes. And with the kids, he does fantastic. He's very gentle with them. He's very crazy with us. And when we take him to my grandparents who are much older, it's like he knows, okay.
They know.
Crazy. So he is very gentle around them too, but we don't have a lot of space in the house for him to run around. And, you know, after killing all my grass in the backyard, I'm a little over it, but he's really sweet and it makes up for all that.
Oh, I love that. Okay. And I know as we're wrapping up in your spare time, you like the gym and getting outdoors and hanging with your wife and kids, of course, and the dogs. What would you say is like, what fills Connor's bucket up? And outside of being a veterinarian and a dad and a dog dad and a husband, is it working out? Is it going outdoors? Is it movies? Like what is that? What does that look like?
Yeah. So definitely the gym. It's a big part of both my day and my wife's day. For her, mainly gets a break from the kids, gets some activity without toddlers grabbing onto her all the time. But definitely lifting weights, running, and anything we can do outside. We really miss the mountains and the hiking trails we had in Phoenix. We have walking paths here, but they're still good. But whether that's kayaking or,
the bouncer has spoken.
Yes. So anything outside, we're all about that. Sunshine time just really recharges us.
Yeah, absolutely. And any shows, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, anything you're watching?
We have recently been sucked into The Traitors.
Oh, it's a popular one.
Specifically, The Traitors UK.
Okay.
Because we don't have the premium level of Peacock, so we can't watch The Traitors US. So we're like, well, we'll settle for the UK one.
Right.
We were sucked in. It shouldn't be as good as it is.
Yes. Yeah. I haven't seen it, so I gotta watch that one because I do love me some shows. So that's awesome.
I recommend it. The concept is simple and it's kind of frustrating at sometimes because you don't really have a choice or a say if you stay in the game or not.
Yeah.
So that it can get a little frustrating, but we have found ourselves yelling at the TV. And if it gets that kind of rise out of us, we're into it.
Well, that's how you know it's a good show, when you're like yelling and getting into it and you're not on your phone during a show. That's how you know, like, you got a good
There's good no show during the show.
Yeah. That's awesome. And last question for you, what would be a piece of advice you give to the listeners out there tuning in about profession, specifically if they're thinking about maybe going into practice ownership like yourself?
Yeah. So I am going a bit unique of a route. I'm not purchasing the practice. I decided to go with a growth incentive this route. So it's a little bit different, but I just didn't have an extra $500,000 laying around to do that. But it for me, and what I would say is, it is the next step of growth in my professional career. And I think especially for the younger veterinarians out there that aren't quite sure, you're not going to grow if you don't take those leaps. So if you stay in your comfort zone, you can still practice great medicine, but I feel like you're missing out on so much professional development and also just missing out on contributions that you can make to the field or the communities that may not be served super well right now. Where we're going, there's maybe, I think, 3 other clinics. And for how fast this Metroplex is spreading out, they need help and they need care. So find those opportunities and take them. Don't wave at too many as they pass by.
Right. Awesome. Well, so proud of all the great work that you're doing, Dr. Connor. And I'm definitely going to be following you as you journey on into this new phase of practice ownership, and so proud of you. All the great work you're doing. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a great first podcast to be on.
See, now you're going to be hooked. Now you're going to be on everybody's.
We'll see.
You're going to be the Taylor Swift to podcasts.
Okay. Does that, I'll take that.
There you go. Right. Well, thank you again. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Don't forget to rate the podcast as we continue to grow here. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.